Well, that was one heck of a way to introduce Supreme Court Justice Gordon Moore. Good morning, everybody. It is 9 o'clock a.m. in KYMN Radio. You are listening to a yet-to-be-named show featuring State Supreme Court Justice Mr. Gordon Moore. Good morning, Gordon. How
morning,
are you?
Good morning, Rich. Great to be on with you.
Great to be on with you, sir. This show is kind of, if I may say so, this is going to be a little bit of an unusual treat for our listening audience. I know it is for me because I'm fascinated. I was a political science student in college, and I've always just loved the inner workings of the American governmental system. The judicial system, obviously, is a standalone or a co-equal part of the government, and we're going to talk an awful lot about that over the coming months. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, the third branch, as we're
exactly.
called. The kind of the mysterious third branch of government. We do have a lot we could talk about, Rich, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be really something. So, you know, state Supreme Court justices don't get a lot of attention. There's not a lot of spotlight shining on the individuals of the state Supreme Court. It can be, you don't go through the same kind of confirmation process that a national or the federal Supreme Court goes through. And, you know, sort of just by the nature of your position, you don't go to the press a lot to talk about an issue or something like that. And that's actually something we should bring up right away. There are many things we can talk about on this show, but there are also some things on this show that we cannot discuss. Isn't that right?
It is. I have to be very careful, Rich. The Code of Judicial Conduct does prohibit judges from expressing an opinion on a case that is before them. It also really restricts the ability of judges to talk about, you know, issues that could come before the court.
Yeah.
So I will have to probably defer discussion on some topics mm-hmm. that I'm guessing you and your audience might be very interested in hearing about. So I'll let you know if that comes to pass. But I think there are a lot of things about the system and the process that we can talk about.
Yeah, I am going to do my best to not try to lead you down any of those paths. But if I do, you just tell me, hey, yeah, knock it off. We can't go there. We got to do something else.
I'll give you the look.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. But I think we should take this first show. We only have half an hour today. And I mean, this is normally going to be scheduled to be about a half an hour show, but it takes me 22 minutes to ask one question. So they might go longer. At 9:30 today, we, of course, on KYMN, we have Twins baseball, the earliest game of the year.
Yeah, happy Patriots Day, right?
And same to you, sir. Thank you. Exactly. Enjoy the Boston Marathon and the Boston Red Sox playing at 8 o'clock in the morning. But I do want to take this time to just introduce you to our audience. Like I say, the Supreme Court justices don't get a lot of spotlight, and I think people are going to want to know quite a bit about you and your background and such. So let's start with where'd you come from? Where'd you grow up?
Well, thanks, Rich. I grew up in Rochester, actually. My dad was a physician at the Mayo Clinic, one of those physicians that came to Rochester with the idea of doing a residency and then going back home. And
sure.
In that case, it was Southwest Michigan is where mm-hmm. he was from. And he ended up staying, practicing 30-plus years at the clinic. And so I grew up in Rochester, a Mayo Spartan from high school days. Nice. And we... I went to Carleton College here in town.
I've heard of Carleton College.
Yeah, I know. It's a place on the other side of the river from the place you went, right?
Exactly.
Although I do have, ironically, I've got a son that's a junior there and a daughter that just recently graduated. So we have a blended family.
I am the black sheep of my family because my grandfather, my aunt, and my dad all went to Carleton. So, I think we understand each other a little bit.
Gordon. Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm a product of Northfield and Carleton, mid-1980s
nice.
for the audience. And my wife, Jane, is 2 years behind me at Carleton. Mm-hmm. We actually met at the Carletonian, ironically, doing newspaper. Those were the days of, you know, when we had to actually have typesetters to get the,
right.
the paper put together.
Right,
I mean,
right.
the students there now wouldn't be able to believe what we had to deal with. We left Northfield. I went to law school at that point in Iowa City, University of Iowa, and Jane and I were married the next year in 1989 after my graduation. Mm-hmm. My legal career started with the Minnesota Attorney General's office.
Before we go there, I want to ask you, what was it about the law that attracted you as a career?
Well, I had somewhat of a similar academic background to you, Rich. Okay. I was a history major at Carleton, but I took a lot of political science courses. Mm-hmm. I was very interested in government, very interested in politics, how society worked, international relations. Mm-hmm. That was the area of my interest at Carleton. And frankly, in the mid-80s, you know, law school became, you know, a place for those types of people to go. I mean, unless you wanted to be an academic and teach, which I thought about seriously. But for me, I always thought there was an opportunity to have an impact being a lawyer. I didn't know exactly what that impact would be, but I decided to pursue that. And so I went to law school with really not a specific plan in mind about, you know, I'm going to be a, you know, immigration lawyer, a family lawyer.
Sure.
I was more interested in conceptual issues related to the law, I mean, constitutional law, criminal law, and over the course of my time in Iowa City, I developed interest in the court system and how the court system worked, both state and federal. And most of my work has been in the public sector as a result of that. I started with the Minnesota Attorney General.
Right.
Hubert Humphrey III was the AG at that time. Worked with just some splendid attorneys back in those days. It was a really good first job. Ironically, I didn't do a judicial clerkship. I kind of wish that I had. And I push clerkships to every young law student I can think of, or any law students of all ages, because it's a great start.
What does a judicial clerkship entail?
Well, it entails working with a judge, either at the trial court level or the appellate level, really closely to get decisions issued and get work done at the court. And it gives young lawyers a chance to see behind the scenes, you know, kind of what really happens in a courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the district court experience is vastly different from what I'm doing now at the Supreme Court, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole different story. It's the difference between the, you know, the urgent care facility of the court system versus the, you know, the, I guess maybe the more complex surgical suites at the Supreme Court. But yeah, judicial clerkships give, you know, young lawyers a chance to see what they like and don't like about the law, areas they'd like to see changed. I mean, I've had clerks that are defense attorneys. I've got former clerks that are prosecutors, some doing real estate work. And a lot of times it's about helping people to sort of see, yeah, I'm not sure I want to do that. Or I see that kind of work. And, you know, maybe you don't want to be a trial lawyer. Maybe you want to be a transactional attorney doing office work. So I started at the Attorney General's office doing civil litigation in the transportation and employment law areas. And
how did you get hooked up with Skip Humphrey's office? Is it just you just applied? And
I
they
just
hired
applied.
You?
I okay. just applied. They were you know, interviewing at Iowa. The AG's office interviews outside of Minnesota, and I was really interested. I'd heard good things about the office. I didn't have any political connections at all. I was just an aspiring attorney. And so my first time interviewing at the Attorney General's office, I think the second person I interviewed with was Norm Coleman.
Oh, wow.
Who obviously ended up becoming a pretty important person in Minnesota.
Yeah.
St. Paul mayor and then later state senator or U.S. senator.
Yeah.
And Norm was the Solicitor General at that point in time.
Okay.
The Solicitor General being the person that is primarily responsible for the AG's appearances before the Supreme Court and formulating appellate law for the AG. And so, you know, I interviewed with, Jack Thunheim, who's now the chief judge of the Federal District Court of Minneapolis, the chief deputy at that time. And, you know, I could go down the list of people from that office that I worked with there that are currently judges or have been judges or doing other amazing things as, you know, foundation chairs. It was just an office full of some really outstanding people. And they sort of threw you into the breach. I mean, you did, I guess, at that point in time in the late 80s, a three-month stint doing what we call implied consent cases. Implied consent cases are the civil side of the DWI penalty, where the Commissioner of Public Safety revokes a driver's license if a person is, you know, stopped with a certain blood alcohol content. And those cases are handled by the Attorney General's office across the state. So that was our trial training program. Wow. They gave you a binder and they gave you a calendar and they told you go to Halleck, go to Worthington, wow. go to Winona and figure out what it, what this is all about.
Run across the state.
And so you, yeah. and that was, you know, pre-cell phone, pre-internet. Yeah. And so you showed up and you had to figure things out, talking to lawyers, talking to police. And it was a really good, you know, kind of baptism by fire on, frankly, a little lower stakes cases. We weren't talking about $1 million lawsuits. We were talking about whether or not someone should get their driver's license back earlier right. than they want, right. than the state thinks they should. So that was my experience. I got involved in eminent domain work for the Department of Transportation. Remember old Highway 12 being converted to 394? I was involved in some of the land acquisition for okay. that, some really high dollar land tracts there along 394. And then went to the Employment Law Division, which is kind of wild and woolly, frankly. Employment litigation is sometimes kind of crazy, and it was. And I would imagine
that can get super contentious, too.
Extraordinarily contentious. And I'd had kind of my fill of that and was considering next steps and ended up, through a series of what turned out to be fortunate events, ending up in Worthington, Minnesota. A classmate of mine had a job at a small firm in Worthington that was the city attorney for the for Worthington, and I knew I was interested in doing some criminal work, and so Jane was from North Mankato, so we drove down to Worthington, and I knew a few lawyers in that area, but I didn't know people real well, and I really liked the firm, Von Holtum, Alters & Shepard, combination of litigation and municipal law. And they offered me a job. And I thought, you know what, this is not maybe the most conventional way to approach things. I mean, at that point in time, that was the L.A. law days of the late right. 80s. You know, you didn't see a lot of people going to small towns to practice law.
Right.
But for me, it was a place to get some community, a place to get, you know, foot in the door in the legal area and to learn. And so I did. I did municipal law with that firm and civil litigation for about 8 years before becoming county attorney.
There's nothing wrong with being a country lawyer. Jeff and I, just before the morning show ended, were talking about today is Clarence Darrow's birthday. Clarence yes. Darrow was maybe the greatest of them all, but a country lawyer, a small town lawyer who did some amazing work.
I yeah. loved it. When I became a trial court judge in Worthington in 2012, I really enjoyed seeing some attorneys that maybe underestimated the country lawyers mm-hmm. come to Worthington for a trial or something. Sure. And, you know, sometimes they learn the hard way that the country lawyers are actually excellent attorneys. And so I agree with you, Rich. Country lawyers have you have to have a little bit of a different approach to things, mm-hmm. but it doesn't make them any less worthy at all.
We're not bumpkins down here, I promise you.
not at all. And so, you know, my work as county attorney brought me directly into the courtroom on more serious cases. I was elected county attorney 3 times in Nobles County before okay. I had the good fortune of applying for a judgeship.
We skipped a little bit. So you went from the law firm to what was it that made you want to run for county attorney?
Well, series of, you know, kind of serendipitous events. The current county attorney moved to Clay County to seek a position in Moorhead. And so there was a vacancy in the county attorney's office, and the county board decided to make the job full-time. Mm-hmm. Many outstate counties in those days had what are called part-time county attorneys, where lawyers in a law firm would also have a, you know, part of their job was to represent the county.
Sure.
And the county board, Worthington, Nobles County, was getting big enough where they needed a full-time county attorney. And so in January of 2002, they said for that election, that fall, we are going to have a full-time county attorney. And nobody from the firm that was handling the county attorney's work wanted the job, frankly. Okay. And so they asked me to consider running for it, and nice. I did. And that was another baptism by fire, because the municipal work that city attorneys do is prosecuting misdemeanors, mm-hmm. certain gross misdemeanors. I mean, less serious cases, mm-hmm. misdemeanors by statute, maximum sentences of 90 days in jail, now a $1,000 right. fine, gross misdemeanors, a year in jail, a $3,000 fine, felonies, obviously, is a whole different story. Right. Plus, the county attorney handle the juvenile delinquency cases, the child protection cases, child support, a whole nother area of work right. that I hadn't really had a lot
Family
of experience
law, right.
on. Yeah, so I ran unopposed in 2002 and was reelected twice. And then in 2011, the long-time judges in Rock and Nobles County decided to retire. And I I applied for one of the positions, and Governor Dayton appointed me to the district court in early 2012, which was a huge honor. I mean, it was just to be a finalist for that position alone was heady. To get the position was, you know, life changing. And so I had to literally walk across the hall at the Justice Center in Worthington from the county attorney's office to the district court, which was interesting. And that's where I worked until the openings for the appellate court came up in 2020 that I applied for and ended up receiving.
Okay. So, I mean, there's obviously an enormous difference between being a lawyer and a judge. I mean, pretty much the only thing you guys have in common is the fact that you both have to know the law cold. But what was the transition like for you?
Well, it's challenging, Rich. As a lawyer, you're an advocate for a client. I mean, you're representing a client. As a public lawyer, like a county attorney or a city attorney, you represent the, you know, the people of that jurisdiction, the state, in criminal cases. For private clients, obviously, your interest is for that client. As a judge, you are not representing a client, obviously. You are seeking to impartially and fairly apply the law to that case. And so you take off the advocate hat. No matter what position you are advocating, you are now looking at cases differently. And so, for instance, I had spent, you know, a good portion of the previous decade doing county attorney work, working with police, working with, colleagues in my office on criminal prosecution. Mm-hmm. Well, suddenly I was in the position where I had to look at those cases from a totally different lens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I joke with some judges that, you know, they ask, is it better to be appointed judge in the county where nobody knows you or the county where everybody knows you?
Right.
And, you know, that's a close call, frankly, because in counties where you know a lot of people, there are a lot of conflict issues. There are a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of baggage sounds negative, but you know people, you get to know people, and so you have to decide what cases you can be involved with and can't be. And sometimes it's tough to have to tell your former colleagues that this case, you know, wasn't charged right, there's no probable cause, there's, you know, the search warrant needs to be suppressed. That didn't happen a lot, but it happened occasionally. And then I had to make sure that the defense had the confidence that I was going to be fair to their clients, even though I'd primarily been a prosecutor. I'd done a little defense work, but mostly a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. So it's a delicate balance in a small town where you're not anonymous and you're working with people who you've either been, you know, colleagues with or supervised before. And I managed to, you know, swerve around the mines pretty well in that job, I guess. By your very nature in contested cases, you know, somebody's likely to be disaffected or unhappy with the decision.
One would imagine.
And so we try to push mediation and resolution of cases where possible. I know sometimes that gets a bad rap. People talk about plea agreements in criminal cases like it's somehow this sort of totally negative thing. Well, the reality is that there aren't resources for every case to be tried. And frankly, not every case should be tried.
Right.
There are cases that are clear cut, and it's just a question of what the you know, appropriate disposition should be.
Does that happen a fair amount? I mean, can a judge look at a case and see enough gray area in there to call the two lawyers into their office and say, plea this out. Let's not try this.
You know, that's a great question, and it's a challenging question. In civil cases, the court has a lot more ability to do that, to call the lawyers in and say, look, you know, this needs to be settled. This is not a good case. I mean, judges can put a fair amount of personal... I mean, they can't involve themselves in the case, but in civil cases, they have the ability to do more, what I would say, mediating might be.
Mm-hmm.
Criminal cases, you have the defendant and you have constitutional rights.
Yes.
And so it would be inappropriate for a judge to tell a defendant what they should or shouldn't do.
Okay.
But I think lawyers know what the outcome is likely to be in most cases.
Yeah.
I mean, most criminal defense attorneys can see a set of police reports. They know the officers involved, you know, assuming there isn't some fact that hasn't been disclosed. I mean, remember, prosecutors have to disclose everything to the defense, videos, reports, test results. So there should be no guesswork as to what evidence is going to come in at trial. And so, you know, the good defense attorneys can sit down and have, you know, that discussion with their clients about, look, if this all comes in, here's the likely outcome. And based on my experience in court, here's likely what you're looking at. Oftentimes, most people charged with cases want to get the matter resolved if frankly, they're guilty. I mean, if they made a mistake, they'd rather not prolong it. However, just because you're charged, you're presumed innocent. Yes. And you know what? Every now and then, new facts come to light, something comes up, and frankly, some cases are just hard to prove. They're just hard to prove. And the prosecutors know that. The prosecutors know what kind of cases can be challenging to win in court. Basically, you know, we're talking about human beings here, Rich. The human condition on display in court.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of theater at times. And,
sure,
and sometimes how people come across in court can change. I mean, you know, they call cross-examination the greatest crucible to determine the truth. And it's interesting how people react to being pushed about their testimony.
Yeah.
And it can be, you know, you've got the Clarence Darrows of the world, the you know, the classic trial lawyers, you know, then, you know, of the Perry Mason kind of TV stuff. But, you know, every now and then you'll have a really important moment in court where you realize that something important just happened with regard to a witness. A story changed a little bit, a fact got brought out that hadn't been brought out, or maybe some investigation revealed something that added to the picture. And, you know, remember, the state's burden in a criminal case is proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a high bar.
Yes, it is.
That's, you know, I don't know. I don't know if you can quantify it. That's north of 95% certainty, I think.
Yeah.
Civil cases, it's a lesser standard. Preponderance of the evidence is more likely than not. That's over 50%.
Right.
There's also a clear and convincing evidence standard, which is kind of between the two of them that applies to different type of cases. But trials are fascinating. They are just fascinating. And the jury trials don't happen every day in court. They probably shouldn't happen every day because it's a huge undertaking to call people away from their lives and their work to come in. But it is a fascinating thing to be part of. And I urge all listeners, if they get that jury summons, to, you know, take advantage of the opportunity, because it'll be something they'll remember.
We are going later one of these shows down the line, we are going to talk about jury duty and the inconvenience of it and the responsibilities attached to it and all of those things. I think that's fascinating. You know, you're talking about cross-examination. I can tell you that I've never been to court. I've never watched a trial. You know, knock on wood, I've never been charged with anything. But I've seen enough movies and TV shows to know that if I were to be cross-examined on anything, I would just crumble like a coffee cake. I mean,
It's intense. I mean, you can just sense the barometric pressure in the courtroom changing when there's a good cross-examination going on. It's just, there's a good lawyers can create an impression by how, you know, they ask questions and how witnesses answer questions. You know, these are the few and far between cases, but I've seen it happen in court where a witness's testimony has fundamentally changed from previous reports. You know, there's new things that have come out.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the hardest things as an attorney in those cases is to see one of your witnesses up there that's really getting beat up on cross-examination.
Right.
And you're trying to not look like it's affecting you at all, because you don't want that jury to know that, boy, my case is, you know, taking on some water here a little bit.
You got to keep your game face
you
on.
You do. There's a theater aspect to it that is fascinating. But I do miss that aspect of the district court, because obviously in the appellate court and the state Supreme Court, we're listening to lawyers argue about what happened in district court for the most part, sometimes in front of agencies and other venues. But it's more focused on the law than it is on the facts, usually.
Sure. We have exactly 3 minutes left in this initial conversation. And I want to remind our audience that moving forward, we're going to have much more time to get into some really interesting conversations down the line. But just with the time we have left, the next time we talk, we are going to talk about the Supreme Court, how you became a justice, what the process is, what it's like to be a Supreme, what your day is, what, you know, all the things that involve that. But it is unusual for a Supreme Court justice to want to do a radio show. What is it that you thought, you know what, I might want to sit down and talk to people for a while once a month?
You know, Rich, in Worthington, I was on the radio station there frequently, not as much as a judge as I was as county attorney, but I felt there was an obligation for the bar and the bench to, when appropriate, communicate with the public about mm-hmm. what it is we do, because it's kind of a mystery, frankly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are elected officials just like your state representatives and state senators. And, you know, we ask the voters to determine whether we should be retained or whether we should be elected. And I think the voters are entitled to hear occasionally. Now, the Supreme Court issues its opinions as a court. I mean, mm-hmm. this isn't the Gordon Moore opinion, unless right. it's a dissent or a separate writing.
Right.
But as far as the majority opinion, it is, you know, written by one justice, but it's for the court, mm-hmm. as opposed to the district court, where it's one judge, one opinion. And so, you know, we speak through our opinions. We speak about what the law is through our opinions. But we have justices that have done public interest related things. Justice G. Barry Anderson has done a public television show in Greater Minnesota for Pioneer Public TV with the legislators for years, called Meet the Legislators. And he's not expressing opinions about the issues that they're debating, but it's more of a public interest effort.
Sure.
And so that's what I view this as, Rich. This is public interest communication. And hopefully to stimulate some greater understanding about the legal process and the law, and maybe to dispel, you know, rumors, things that aren't correct. I think mm-hmm. getting correct information out is important. We have a lot of ground we could cover in different topics.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to it. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on. And for me, this is a kind of a continuation of the things that I've done in the past. Obviously, the stage is a little bigger here.
Yeah.
We got a statewide position here, but it doesn't change me and my ability to want to communicate with people about the legal system.
Well, we are incredibly fortunate here at KYMN Radio that you want to be a part of this. Our listeners in the Northfield and surrounding area are really, I think, going to enjoy this. And this is going to be offered also as a standalone podcast. So, we're going to reach an international audience at some point, Gordon.
Yeah, let's make sure we get a show title for yeah. first. Then we can maybe go to the Apple App Store, right?
Let's crawl before we take off on a sprint.
Right.
All right. Gordon Moore, thank you so much. And we will be talking with you again next month.
Thanks, Rich. I look forward to it.
All right. All right. You are listening to 95.1 KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota. Coming up very soon, we will have Twins baseball from Boston on Patriots Day. Pregame for that starts at 9:30. Until then, this is Josh Ritter.